But from that point, it was just a matter of, okay, I got to put all this kind of stuff together now. And now that there isn't a moving image that I'm necessarily locked into, I wield more power in regards to molding the action. So I could decide how a scene breaks down. And I think the example that I had given to you was if we have a scene where two characters are in a room or one character walks up to another one, I can decide, am I the character already in the room or am I the person outside of the room coming up to the other character? Because obviously those are two vastly different sound design approaches.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Joshua Sui. My next guest is the founder of JS Audio and is a veteran of over 15 years in the audio industry as a sound designer, audio engineer, and producer. His goal is to capture the essence of creative people's ideas to bring tangible experiences to their audiences. Helping people tell stories through sound is his passion. His name is Joshua Sui, and in this episode, we talk about the subtle powers of audio, the unexpected moments that define a mix, and why even the smallest sound can shape how we experience a story. If you want to learn more about how sound can influence feeling, this one's for you. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Joshua Sui.
Well, welcome, Joshua. I appreciate you taking the time. And yeah, I love your background there.
Thank you. It's not, this is a real background. It is, actually, because we were just speaking about the Dolby Atmos just a second ago, and I bought a iLoud Atmos rig off a buddy of mine. So that's like the stacks of totes. That's where all that came from. So we're in the process of finishing a plan for a new garage space. And then the bonus room above, that's the new studio. So I'm trying to have ChatGPT help me put together plans for Atmos placement for speakers. And I want to be all fancy and put cable traps in the floor so there's no cables on the floor, all that kind of stuff. So
that sounds really intricate. And
yeah.
I hope it works out really well.
ChatGPT,
though, I'm curious, when you ask it, what are you asking it?
Well, I did a lot trying to have it train on just like me specifically. So I use it a lot for like, I wanted to comb different areas of the internet for gigs. For instance, this one thing that I use it a lot for is to send me like a digest every morning of verified, paid, open audio gigs. Hoping that it'll help speed up the process of me rather than having to wade through everything, I could have it do all that kind of stuff for me. So I'm trying to use AI for the sake of what AI is supposed to do, is try to make my life easier. But in this particular case, I took the plans that we got from our architect. They're just like the basic plans, but with dimensions and things. And I'm like, hey, here's my space. Here's all the gear that I have. Can you help me just put together a plan for where things should go? How can I wire things together? I also asked it, like, what do you think about acoustic treatment? And can you give me plans to build those, material list, all that, in hopes that it'll just spit out a PDF of everything that I need? I can hand off a set to my contractor. Here's all the specs and here's everything that I'm looking to do. And then I have a completely separate list for all of my acoustic treatment builds and all that kind of stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So actually making good use of it the way that it should be used.
Right. But it's one of those,
well,
it's a bit of, and it's a bit of trial and error too, because it's, of course, it's very broad. So trying to train it to make it focus on the right information, and we're not just on random forums and stuff trying to pull information. But so I have a couple friends that do studio builds and stuff. So I'm hoping I could be like, hey, what do you think of this.
Yeah, so, they can confirm it at least. I've noticed that ChatGPT has a tendency to hallucinate.
Yes. I've had it too. Even some, well, as it was starting to learn my text, I should say my speaking style, sometimes when I would have it try to help me write like cover letters and stuff for things, I'm like, I don't know where this is even coming from sometimes. So, but now it's gotten a lot better. It's almost to my voice, but it's not quite there yet. So I still need to do a lot of tweaking if I'm having it help me with that. But I usually, like, if I find something online someplace that's a job situation, I'll just copy and paste it in and be like, hey, based off of this, can you help me craft something? And then I go in and fix it so it sounds more like me. And then I usually use it that way. I've rarely just put something in and whatever the output is, just use that, because typically it's still not me 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. Yeah. But I love how you're using it. That seems like a really innovative way to get the most out of it, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And I use it more than Google now. I go there first when I'm asking for
stuff. You're not the
first
person to tell me that.
Yeah. It's super handy because I'll just think of something. Like, I had an idea for an app and just talk to it about it. And it's like, well, from what we see, an app of that type doesn't exist at all in the market. So I'm like, all right, well, that's cool. And I'm not a designer. I don't know how to code or anything like that. It's like, well, I'm also using it to help me with that. It's like, here's the full breakdown of the coding process and what you can use to actually build it and this and that. And ask it like, well, business plan wise, should I invest the money in having other people do it? Could I do it myself? So it was helping me figure those types of things out.
But let's get back to the topic of sound.
Sure.
Because that's why we're here. And I know that you do a lot of that. So my question to you is, if you can tell me an early memory of how sound moved you. Do you have
Sure.
one of those?
Specifically, and this is always something that I've thought about, just is my own history. I come from a very musical family in that everybody in my family is really interested and listens to a lot of music. I was the only one that ever really did anything in regards to playing an instrument or pursuing it in some other capacity other than a, you know, hobby, if you will. So, and it's a weird story in a sense, but the song Free Falling from Tom Petty is what made me want to play the drums. And I know it sounds weird, but there's a section in the bridge where it's kind of the marching snare sound. And I heard that and was like, I don't know what that is, but that sounds cool. I want to play that. So then I did percussion and things like that in elementary school into middle school. I believe it was like seventh grade or so. I broke my arm. Obviously, it's difficult to play percussion instruments with only one arm. And I was kind of fading out from it at that point. I was getting less interested in it. And my problem is practice. I just didn't want to do that, because what kid wants to sit down and practice flams and rudiments and things like that, which is super important to be able to be a good drummer. But of course, that's not what I did. So with that, as I moved into middle school, I got into hip hop culture. We had some high schoolers that came down, and it ended up my cousin randomly. I had no idea that he was able to do it, but him and a bunch of his friends were like, we're teaching breakdancing classes. And I'm like, well, that sounds really interesting. So I got into that, got into scratch DJing, turntablism and stuff like that. DJed weddings and stuff like that. Again, I wasn't really a great DJ. I could do it. And that was the heyday of like the mid and early 2000s of the CD player was the king. And so I wasn't using vinyl to do that. And the other problem too is I didn't really want to get into DJing for younger people because I just didn't like the music. So my collection was really geared around classic rock and stuff like that, because that's what
that's
I grew up on.
It's pretty important, you know, to like the people you're playing
exactly.
for.
So like I could DJ parties for my parents all the time because I had tons of music that covered that. And I never was out like in clubs or anything like that DJing. It was just something that I did on the side. Again, had I practiced more, I could have been better. But even with the drums, at no point did I ever really have aspirations to be a professional drummer. I just wanted to play with friends and that kind of thing. But all that kind of stuff. And I'm the youngest of four. So when I was in my teens, my oldest brother and sister were in college. So all the music that they were listening to and bringing back, all the stuff I was finding with the breakdancing stuff and digging into like where did the samples come from and all the funk music and stuff like that, I got really interested in that. The classic rock roots and all that was this perfect storm. So all that kind of coalesced into what I feel is I have a pretty eclectic taste when it comes to music. I like all sorts of stuff. So that fed into, I think it was my sophomore or junior year of high school, my English teacher she also helped run the drama department in high school. She's like, I think you would be really good to hop on the tech crew and figure out the sound stuff. And I, again, had some basic knowledge of things just from DJing. My setup was very, very simplistic. So learning how to do the technical side of things of setting up a mixer and setting up a PA and stuff like that. And I was like, well, this is cool. And then, of course, you're moving into senior year. And well, what am I going to be when I grow up? My aspirations prior to that were always I really liked cooking. So I was considering being a pastry chef. And because I'm like, I want to get paid to make dessert. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. And of course, right now I see lots of people on Instagram and online that I'm like, that's all the stuff that I would love to do is watching pastry chefs there make stuff. So it's kind of come full circle.
But we wouldn't be having this conversation if that's where we went.
I'd be like, well, here, talk about the patisserie that I opened or something like that. And from there, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was, it was after prom. And the way our school did it, we had a big, it was kind of like a party thing after where different games and stuff like that. And I was talking to a friend's dad. He's like, well, my nephew is going to Ohio University and he's studying audio production there. I'm like, okay, my best friend was going there. I was like, hey, I'll do that. I mean, I'm really interested in this music stuff. I like to tell people I made the sound decision of getting into the music industry to try to make a living. And so I told my best friend, Matt, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to OU too. I'm going to do 2 years of community college first, because as I watch my older siblings, I'm not spending the money for a dorm and meal plan and stuff like that when I can just stay home and I could still work and then just go to school. Actually, it's funny where I'm at right now. The community college I went to was like, you know, 5 minutes from here kind of a thing. So
that's got to be nice.
Yeah, it wasn't at the time. You know, I still having to drive. Actually, I lived like another 10 minutes or so the other way from where I'm at right now.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now, I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show.
So I did my 2 years of community college, and what really set the scene, if you will, I took a sound for film class and totally fell in love with just this concept of building sound effects and bringing that kind of stuff to life. One project we had was replacing all the sound effects in a cartoon. And specifically, it was the Bugs Bunny versus Elmer Fudd boxing match one. So being able to blend real life sound effects, and we had the Hanna-Barbera sound library available with the school. So I'm like, I have the stuff that I had always heard as a kid and all this new stuff, and being able to blend them together to create this project of all sorts of different stuff. I'm like, this is really cool. This is the stuff that I want to do. And then our last project, and it would be the same thing when I went to college, or I should say transferred to OU, we had to like re-sound design a scene from a movie. And the community college one was American Graffiti. And specifically there was the scene, I think it was like a wide shot of the diner and people were getting out of their cars. And I'm like, we need the sound of a car door closing. And in the booth, there was a big heavy toolbox. So I was kind of manipulating that in a specific way and, you know, a little bit of processing. And hey, it works. So that also kind of turned my brain on to context is important. I can literally add whatever I want as long as it makes sense in context to what people are seeing. So that continued to fuel that. Then when I transferred down to OU, I was a music production major first, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. So then I transferred to audio post-production. I also thought it would be smart to pick up film as a minor, because I'm like, if I'm going to work in film, having an understanding of the history and mechanics of it makes sense to me. So I did that. And then I filled the rest of the time with history classes, where basically I was a class or two shy of a history minor, but I'm like, I'm not going to stay here for that. So, and then I graduated cum laude. Yay. And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. Got my degree. It was the first time I got straight A's in my entire life was in college. And I'm like, well, I'm paying for this myself. Exactly. And I'm paying for this, so I might as well do it well.
Sure.
And yeah, so but at that point, it's now I graduated. I have skills, but not enough to get a job in the industry yet. And I'm like, I have to start paying student loans back here in 6 months. So then that from, you know, 2000 and what was that, 9 until basically 2020, it was a day job, 9 to 5 to feed myself and pay the bills. Audio was nights and weekends, working with bands, working on films and stuff. So I was trying to juggle both of those roles. I liked working with bands and stuff, but I was always more passionate. I always felt I was better working in post-production. So that was the course I would eventually take. It was like 2018 or so. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to concentrate all my efforts on post-production work and do less music. And from that point, you know, things worked well. And then at the time, I had moved to Nashville in 2016. And this was December of 2019, just called Outreach. I had done some podcasting work while I was in Nashville. The first big project that I had was a drama podcast. And basically, it was the same concept and approach that I would sound design a film, but with no moving image. So,
oh, yeah, it's all the sound, right?
Yeah,
the whole,
exactly.
You're telling the story. That's,
right.
Yeah.
And the power that I wield is the post-production engineer on that, in part, Faith McQuinn, who ran the project. And I've done pretty much the sound for all of her movies and all of her projects because she's the best and I love her very much. So I always thank her and appreciate her for igniting this drive and this love of podcasting that I have is really coming from her, from, you know, essentially getting a chance to get into things. But from that point, it was just a matter of, okay, I got to put all this kind of stuff together now. And now that there isn't a moving image that I'm necessarily locked into, I wield more power in regards to molding the action. So I could decide how a scene breaks down. And I think the example that I had given to you was if we have a scene where two characters are in a room or one character walks up to another one, I can decide, am I the character already in the room or am I the person outside of the room coming up to the other character? Because obviously those are two vastly different sound design approaches, because if the person's coming in the room, are they walking down the hallway? What is all the diegetic sounds, ambience, things like that of them coming from some other place to the character in the room? Or if I'm in the room, I can hear them coming from the back of the room. Okay, well, where do I want the door to come in? How big is the room? Those types of things have to be in consideration for it to be believable. And that really ignited my passion. And I, at the time, didn't think about that as a career option until like 2019 or so. And of course, anybody listening and watching understands what is coming soon after that in 2019. I got a job with Podfly Productions, who I work with now. I've been with them since December of 2019. I'm now the technical director, as well as I have my hands in lots of different projects of various types. So it's been a lot of fun. But that was what was able to get me through the pandemic. As the pandemic set in, I reached out to them. I'm like, I want to do more. I just don't know what that is. I want more work. I want to be able to get out of my day job that I had at the time. I was running the second shift for the audio video department at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. It was nice to have a job that actually utilized my skills. And I really got a more fundamental focus, especially on things like troubleshooting from that job, which was great. Because each part of the hotel was just slightly different. Everything had their own little quirks and things like that that I would have to remember if I'm moving, you know, signal around a room or something like that. And learning all that kind of stuff was a really big benefit of just signal flow and where are things at in my chains so I can then, you know, do a better job of being able to figure that kind of stuff out. And with this type of job with podcasting, I'm remote troubleshooting people. And we just had the conversation beforehand of trying to figure out why we had an issue with somebody's microphone where it works on one computer but not on another and those types of things. So all that being said, I've been able to make my living since the pandemic full time between podcast sound design and just freelance with sound design for film and in podcasts.
Yeah, that's a lot. And it's actually really fantastic to hear that that happened for you right around the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a lot of people, actually for voiceover, it was pretty good because those of us who had home studios, we were doing great.
Right.
But if you didn't have that anticipation, if you had not anticipated anything like that happening, you kind of had to figure it out really quick.
Yeah.
So when you were doing your thing in the pandemic, how did you see things change? Because I know, like, for instance, like Zoom became a big thing because,
right,
you know, we were all remote. So when everything went remote, how did that change your relationship to audio, let's say?
Sure. A big part of that at the time, I think even we were in some sense caught off guard on what was going to happen, because obviously at that time, podcasting was literally reaching the pinnacle and everybody had the time and energy to make a podcast. So everybody wanted to do one. And we pretty much specialize in branded podcasting. So brands are like, we can't really do anything else right now. So let's put all of our creative energy into making unique content for people to listen to because they have the time now. So part of it was just trying to figure out what is the landscape right now and what tools are available to us that's going to make this job easier for everybody. Because in a sense, before we were kind of paralleled on focusing on content for branded content for podcasting for brands and things like that, but also our more legacy clients, if you will, are your self-funded podcaster, which is fine. And what the way we were kind of pretty much setting it up is we're going to teach you essentially the aspects and the basics of podcasting. You're going to record, and then we're just going to handle post-production on your behalf. And over time, we've changed it to where we want to have full control over what's going on in regards to sending microphones out to people, sound checking people, making sure that they sound as good as possible because I want the best quality coming in. Then
and
I'm handling.
Thank you for that,
of
by
course.
The way.
Of course.
That's number one problem.
Yes.
That is a number one problem of a lot of the podcasts that started up, especially, you know, people
Definitely.
Who just didn't have any background in audio.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're leaning back in their chair. You can hear the whole room around them.
Right.
There's, yeah. sound that makes your ears hurt
right.
is not good for a podcast.
It's true. But at the same time, what I liked about it, though, was it humanized podcasting and humanized the personalities that everybody had known in those podcasts. So being able to see an interview and somebody's child walks in the room, like these are people with real life situations. They're just like you and I. They're just doing something different. So I thought that was a pretty unique component to it is where, okay, we could kind of let things be slightly more lax in regards to quality. If they're still sounding good on mic, but other things are happening, it was more acceptable because that's just what was going on for the time and it was the pandemic. So it was kind of that unique cross-section of quality and the content, but also like if it's not 100% flawless, that's okay. So that was kind of a unique twist, if you will, in that situation. But part of that too certainly was trying to move away from just people using Zoom because it was the audio quality is just not there. And it's still a thing that people talk about now. Why can't I use Teams or Zoom
yeah.
and such?
It's Zoom has gotten better, I will say.
True.
But I still wouldn't use it over Riverside or
Absolutely.
Squadcast or something like that.
Right.
Just mostly because of the not a lot of people understand echo cancellation and not a lot of people are aware of
using headphones.
Yeah, yes, that's definitely, I mean, you saw on the intake form that I actually have like a check there that says, if you don't have headphones, we're not doing this.
Right.
Like, that's a big thing. And a lot of people don't understand how big that can be because, I mean, you know, echo cancellation. So for the people who are listening, why don't you, could you explain that just so that that is an easier concept
sure.
for people to get?
Now, 100% how it's all working on the back end, I'm not entirely sure, but more than likely what it's just essentially doing is figuring out the timing of the audio coming out of your speakers to it being able to be listened to on your mic to help prevent feedback. And then it's doing some sort of correction and probably phase cancellation is probably what it's doing to stop essentially the sound of your audio coming out of your speakers, getting into your mic and you know, creating a feedback loop. So if you don't have headphones, that's the whole point of that. You should obviously, whenever you can, have headphones for those purposes. But essentially, yeah, it's just helping to ensure that the echo or the room ambience and things like that just essentially get canceled out to give you better quality and help prevent feedback.
Yeah. And also when someone is talking over another person, you're
it squelches down and gets
yeah.
all goofy. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't sound all that good. So it just lessens the quality of the audio. And for a person that's watching on video, it may look like I am not wearing headphones, but I am actually wearing
She's
earbuds.
All sneaky, sneaky.
Yes. I'm all sneaky, sneaky. So I don't look like Princess Leia on camera.
Yeah. I got my giant ear goggles on.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ted Rosnick, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. And if you want to learn more about it, keep listening.
Yeah, but what that takes, and for anyone who is interested in learning this kind of thing for their own podcast, what that takes is just a really long extension cord. So
yeah,
what
I
have is like, yeah, it's all plugged in here. Exactly. But it's a long enough extension cord that I can put it behind me.
Yeah.
So no one's seeing it. And then the earbuds come in from the back.
Right.
So, yeah, it just depends on how you do it. But earbuds or earphones, like headphones, are
yeah.
really super important just to get great audio.
Mm.
Yeah. Were there any particular podcasts that you worked on that you could talk about while you were in pandemic era that
sure.
you thought were really awesome?
Yeah. And they're ones that I still in some capacity have a chance to work on.
Sure.
My favorite, certainly, probably of all of them, we do a show for the American Kennel Club called the Down and Back podcast, which, if I remember correctly, was specifically a command. Is what that term comes from, like for a dog is down and back. And I just love the show so much, in part because it's not an interview show. We're not interviewing people on it. So the essential core group is myself and our creative director, Mike Tennant, and he's a lovely Canadian gent. Tons of radio experience and award-winning, and just his writing is just so much fun to bring to life just because of just what energy he already or the energy that he puts into it. And it just makes my life in my job very easy because it's very easy to pull that out. And so it's just the two of us essentially on the Podfly end. And then American Kennel Club side, it's basically the host. His name is Bud Bacone, another lovely gentleman. We have so much fun when we do our recording sessions. And he has been writing for the AKC Gazette for a number of years. So he has so much knowledge just off the top of his head to bring it full circle. We also work with their archivist. So we have an entire archive of AKC information that we can dive into for certain things. But we didn't have the archivist for the first season because of the pandemic. So literally between Bud and Melissa, who, if I remember correctly, she's the head of marketing there, basically between them, gave us all the information we needed to write the entire first season. So we had no archivist. We had no additional information. It was just Bud's like, yeah, I know this, this, and this. And it was just crazy. Because you're like, it's a show about dog breeds, but what exactly could that be about? But we got to dive into some really unique and interesting topics, a lot of cultural components to it, things of, you know, why we went from calling them Belgian police dogs to German shepherds, in particular after like World War II, because of the whole German stigma, things like that. We did a really cool episode on dogs in marketing. So RCA Victor, Mack Truck, the Greyhound, that kind of stuff. So it's all the questions and
fascinating.
Unique. Yes, it's all the unique information that you can get from those types of stories. And then basically Mike would write the script. We would record Bud doing the voiceover, and then I just put everything together and build all the sound effects and music and all that kind of stuff in there. And they're just so much fun. Some of them that we did too was like a grab bag episode where it was, here's questions and answers. So we did like the digital mailbag where I make the sound of it sounds like we have these giant bags of mail being tossed onto the desk and all the mail spilling out and Bud's opening the letters to read them and stuff like that. So being able to dig into those types of things is a lot of fun because it's a ton of creative freedom for me, but at the same time, it's just how I'm able to bring these things to life. And it's another instance of a synergy between myself and a writer and producer that here's what I want, here's what I don't want. I understand, having worked with Mike for so long, like what I can get away with and what might be fringy. And certainly I know for the most part, if I put something in or if I think I'm going to put something in, I'm like, well, Mike's probably going to X this, so let's not even try. So I can get the episodes done even faster because I have an idea of where things are going to go.
Yeah.
And
when you get comfortable, that's, yeah.
Right, exactly. And then he also gives me a lot of room to play. So if I want to try and experiment with some different things, generally I have an idea where I can go. I think we maybe even talked about it like kind of on the pre-interview, but I'm not the type of person that is, I don't like being told do whatever you want because I have too many options. I mean, I just looked at my sound effects library not long ago and I'm at almost 500,000 sounds. So I don't want to
wow.
go through all of that.
That's a lot.
It's
yeah.
a ton. So oof. give me guardrails and I can play inside of that. That makes my job a lot easier.
I'm curious about something though. When you mentioned that huge library,
mm-hmm.
did you make any of those?
Some. Most of them are purchased libraries or I've acquired from other places. But I'd say at least 95% of them are purchase sounds. But what I'll also do is if I work on a project and I make a lot of stuff that I like, I'll export those, bring them back into my library, and then it's just continuing to composite things and put different things together. So I've used a lot of sound effects layers in multiple projects, but there's other things with them. Rarely am I just taking one sound from one project and just dropping it in without doing some sort of manipulation to it or layers or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a project that you worked on where you had to make your own sound effects and it just worked better than something you could buy?
Sure. And this was kind of before I got into, if the viewers or listeners are familiar with Krotos Audio, they make some really, really cool plugins for just sound design in general. But in particular, I leverage theirs a lot for using Foley sound effects. So footsteps, clothing sounds, things like that. So depending on what was going on, if I didn't have good cloth movement sounds, let's say, in my library, I would do my best to try to just shove a mic in front of my shirt and manipulate it that way, because sometimes it's just faster just to do that than trying to find the right sound. You know, if it's a film and I can see what somebody's wearing, I could try to find clothes that I have that are similar to that and make that happen. But with like Krotos Audio, and they have a plugin called Reformer Pro, it's basically got an XY grid on it, and each quadrant you can load a different package of sound effects into, or kind of create your own and drop those in. And then it'll kind of do like a round robin, will pull different parts of different sound effects. Plus you can move a dot around the grid and it'll favor the different packs based on the position of that specific dot. So it's really, really cool to be able to make Foley sounds so quickly with that. And basically how it works is it takes any live input and allows you to change that essentially into the sounds of your choice. So I could trigger with my microphone. What I typically do is just plug a microphone or a instrument cable into the DI in my interface and just thumb it with my finger so it makes it hum. So every time it hums, it'll generate the sound. I can go in and kind of draw in the waveform a bit more if I need more intensity versus less, but generally it's just enough to give me just enough texture for the Foley stuff. I may drag and drop some other things in as I go if I need to, but I found that to be a pretty good way to go. I've been starting to use the mic more to trigger things. I feel like I have a little bit more control that way, even though I feel like an idiot like humming into a microphone for things, but you kind of can humanize the performance a bit more, and it actually makes it a bit more believable, which is fun. So I just had taken a sound effects or sound design class online, and part of that was I did some Foley work live just for some of the project. There was one, it was a super short scene of like an interrogation, and somebody grabs documents on the table and then is pointing, like tapping on the table to another picture or something like that. So I literally just took my SM7B, flipped it upside down over here with some papers, and just acted it out, cleaned it up a little bit, and it did the trick. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really innovative to make your own sounds, and definitely it can save some time rather than searching through thousands and thousands
right.
of different samples.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.